bad. Tell her to try through it, it'll be connected. At least she can hear the call.
Right. So
yes,
I started the recording.
Sir.
Huh?
Hello again?
Can you hear me now?
Yes, much better, Lin Lin. If you speak slowly, we probably should be able to hear you.
Okay.
Excellent. Thank you very much indeed. So my name is Dennis Jennings. Most of you probably know me, and I'm going to try and chair this call. We have an hour to, and it's a sort of introductory call to, let me just mute my computer, otherwise I'll get thoroughly confused. Just a moment. That's better. Now, because I'm on Adobe Connect. So let me just do the roll call, first of all, and go through the list of people. Is Akshat Yossi on the call?
Hi, Dennis. I'm there.
Welcome. Alexei Sovosanov?
Yes, I'm here.
Hello.
Welcome. Alireza Saleh? Are you on the call? All right. Chris Dillon, are you on the call?
Yes, I'm here, Dana.
Hi, Chris. Daniel Kalchev? Dmitry Komanyuk? My apologies to everybody for my terrible pronunciation. Hopefully I'll get things right. Fad Batanya? Is Fad on the call? James Singh? Joseph Yee? Joseph, I think I heard
Joseph,
you.
Yes, I'm here. Hi, Dennis.
Hi there. Lin Lin Zhu?
Yes, here. Yes,
oh,
I'm
good,
here.
Lin Lin. We can hear you perfectly. Mahesh Kulkarni?
Mr. Kulkarni is unluckily in Delhi for another work.
Okay, thank you. Mirjana Tashik?
Yes, I'm here.
Hey. Nadia?
Hello?
Hello, Mirjana, thank you. I hear you loud and clear.
Okay.
Nadia Morozova?
Yes, here.
Nadia, welcome. Neha, I think I heard you earlier.
Yeah, yes, here.
Good. Panayotis? Estilopoulos?
No.
Sarmat Hussain?
Yes, I'm here.
Hi, Sarmat. Welcome. Now, Shed Shah, I hope I pronounced that correctly. Are you on the call? Vagelis, I think I heard you earlier. Vagelis?
Okay.
Vladimir?
I'm on the call.
Thank you, Vladimir. Will Shorter? Yoav Keren? I think I heard you earlier, Yoav. You may be on mute. Yashiro Yoneya?
I'm on the call.
Welcome. Joe Chang?
Yes, I'm here in China.
Joe, welcome. I'm very loud and clear. And on the consultant side, Andrew, I heard you earlier.
And you did?
Asmus Freitag? Not on the call. Michael Everson, I believe you're on the call.
Oh.
Excellent. That's it. On the staff side, is Dennis Chang on the call?
Yes, I am. I'm sorry.
Hi, Dennis. Francisco, I heard you on the call. Karen, are you on the call? Karen Lentz?
No.
Kim Davies?
I don't think so.
Naila, I heard you on the call. Patrick Jones, I heard you on the call. Steve
yep.
Cheng? Xiaodong Li? Okay. Now, thank you for that. I have noted that.
This is James Singh. This is James Singh.
James, how are you?
Hi.
And Dennis, this is Vagelis again. I was disconnected, sorry.
No problem. Thank you very much for this. Okay. And on the observers, is Edmund Chung there?
I'm here.
Edmund, good. Welcome. Doc, I believe I heard you earlier.
Yeah, I'm here.
And Rinalia Abdul-Rahim? Okay. So we now know who's on the call. The purpose of the call is an introductory one to begin to set the scene for the major meeting next, face-to-face next meeting next week in L.A. Now, in terms of this call, we have, of course, the phone call. If people are having great difficulty, we have a dial-out facility as well, which we can use, which we're going to use for Lin-Lin, but Lin-Lin, you're now successfully on, and we can hear you clearly. And we also have the Adobe Connect, which would encourage you to join, and we'll try and use that facility to signal when people want to talk and so on. So those are the admin procedures for this call. In terms of the face-to-face meeting, I think all the information has been circulated on the email list. If you have any questions, please raise those on the email list so that everybody's clear for next week. Naila, I was going to ask you to give a general background to the program. Can you do that briefly for me, or would you prefer me to do it?
Yes, I can do that.
Thank you.
Okay. Did you want that done now?
Yes, please, Naila.
Okay. So quickly, I see here from the list that we have a number of people that have been involved with this. So
please loudly. Thank you. Please loudly.
Okay.
Thank you.
Is this any better?
That's much better, Naila. Thank you.
Okay. So I can see here from the attendees on this call, thank you, everyone, that a number of you have been involved with this program, so I'll try to be brief. This project started out in 2011, early 2011, where there was a board resolution that we needed to do more on trying to define variant issues so that we may lead to addressing variant solutions, managing variant solutions. And so the project started with six case studies that we conducted in different scripts. I believe they were Arabic, Chinese, Devanagari, Latin, I'm missing a couple, Greek, and I can't think of the sixth one. If somebody can help me out here, I would appreciate it.
Yes, well, it was the Greek.
The Cyrillic.
Arabic, Devanagari, Latin.
Chinese.
And Chinese, of course. Thank you, Naila. Please continue.
Yes. So there were six case studies that we conducted with the community, much like this format that we're going to use for this project, where we had community volunteers that led the team. And for a period of about 5 or 6 months, they studied issues related to variants in their script. The output of that work was an issues report that was published for each of the scripts. And that happened around September, October of last year, 2011. Then we took the combination of those six scripts, put together yet another volunteer team from the community, and that team served as advisors to the ICANN staff, and an integrated issues report was put out based on the experiences and the information from the six scripts. The integrated issues report attempted to synthesize and find what's common and what's unique to each of the scripts that were studied. And that became the integrated issues report that was released in December of last year. In that issues report, we also had a number of issues or a number of, basically it addressed it talked about what still needs to be addressed before we head into solution area. And so this produced what we're working on now, several projects that materialized out of the integrated issues report. One of them is what we're doing here, which is creating a tool, a process for defining labels that can be defined as variants. And that's the project we're working on here. There's a couple other projects that are going on as well. One is to examine further the user experience for activating variants in the root zone. and that's and another project for creating a tool in which variance can be expressed, something more uniform that everyone can use, because right now we have several formats in which the IDN tables, for the lack of a better word right now, and their variants are defined. But where we're at now is a result of all of last year's work, ending with the integrated issues report, identifying the further work that we need to do. I think that captures it, Dennis.
Thank you very much indeed, Nayala. I know most of the people on the call already know all that very well and have read the integrated issues report and are very familiar with it. Nevertheless, I felt it valuable to bring people up to speed, and thank you for that, Nayala. Francisco, could I ask you to introduce now this particular project, Project P2.1, or the LGR Process Project? Francisco.
Thank you, Dennis. Hello, everyone. The goal of this project is to develop a process to be used in a later phase, the process to construct and maintain the label generation rules for the root zone. The idea of this project is to build a common framework that will be shared among the different script or language or other base communities for the root. In this project, the idea is to define things like, for example, what the communities should be. Should there be script communities, language communities, or something else? And a few other parameters that were mentioned in the integrated issues report, like, for example, how comprehensive should be the definition of the code points that should be included in the LGR, where there should be some expert review and so on. But the idea is to have the group of consultants that will be leading the way, and particularly Andrew Sullivan, who is the main writer, together with Asmus Freitag and Michael Everson. They will be putting material in front of us, the volunteers and the rest of the team, so we can review and propose changes as we see fit. We also have John Flenstein as a reviewer. The idea is to send him things more advanced in order for him to provide a specific point of view. And as you may know, we're planning to have a meeting next week in LA and another meeting in Toronto just before the ICANN meeting. The goal is to produce the final process by the end of February next year. So we have a few months and quite a piece of work to do. Thank you, Dennis.
Francisco, thank you very much indeed. So, Andrew, over to you. The LGR process, will you begin to introduce that and introduce your document and give us an overview of where we are on the document that you're producing?
Sure, thanks. This is Andrew Sullivan. Hello, everyone. I guess I've circulated a couple of drafts, the most recent of which is has a file name PROC4LGR 2012-08-17A. So that's the one that we're going to talk about today. We have another update in train, but I haven't circulated it yet. Unfortunately, I fell a little bit ill after the ITF meeting and lost a substantial portion of a week where I was expecting to do a lot of work on this. So I apologize that we don't quite have a complete draft yet for everybody to look at, but I think the key portions of things that we want to discuss in this document are at least here in draft form. you know, I guess we have a number of changes to make. The basic idea here is that we're going to write a document that is the procedure by which the root label generation rules are developed. And you may recall from the integrated issues report that we define the label generation rules as having basically two components. One is the repertoire of allocated Unicode code points that are permitted in new labels for the zone. And the second component are the code point substitution rules that we would that would be applied to any of those code points. So if the code point appears, then there's a set of rules, which may be an empty set, that change, you know, that generates other labels, and then those become the variant labels that are either allocated and maybe activated, or else that block other labels in the zone. And this is this particular one is dedicated only to the root zone. So we don't have we're not trying to develop something that is going to apply to everything. I'm sorry.
Can people make sure their phones are muted, please? Dennis here. Back to you, Andrew.
So this is the goal of this is to produce a procedure by which those rules are established for the root zone. So these are essentially the ground rules. The draft that we have depends critically on two other documents that if you haven't read them, you're just going to be completely at sea. So I encourage you all to read them. The first is the Integrated Issues Report from last year, and there is a reference to that in the notes, in the references for the in the draft. And the second is an intranet draft that the Internet Architecture Board has adopted, called Principles for Unicode Code Point Inclusion in Labels in the DNS. And that's available from the IETF tools site, and I believe I circulated the references of those to the mailing list as well. So if you haven't read them, you'll need to. The integrated issues report is lengthy, but there are a number of terms that we're going to depend on from that document, and you know the background is in there. So I'm not going to repeat all of that in this document because we've already published it. The IAB draft is quite short and I think readable, so it should not take a lot of time to read. The IAB draft includes a number of principles which have been summarized somewhat a little bit loosely in this draft. It's those principles that appear in Section 3 of the draft. I think that those principles are important foundational ones, but I want to point out that the IAB has not published this draft. It's not an RFC yet, and so it has not achieved even IAB consensus, never mind, well, it's never going to achieve IETF consensus because it's an IAB draft, but it hasn't been out for wide comment and so on. So that draft could change, but I've taken those principles as foundational anyway. So if people want to comment on them, that would be a good thing to hear if people don't think that they're a good idea. I'm not going to go through the draft in detail, but I want to point out sort of the basic structure of what is proposed in this. The basic structure is that we take those principles as foundational principles, and notice they're principles. They're not rules strictly, but they're principles by which, you know, that are supposed to guide individuals in making decisions. And then we have a sort of two-phase project. And the first phase is groups of people who are interested in or otherwise engaged with a particular language community, a given script or a writing system. So this is a sort of, you know, linguistic community very loosely defined. It's a little amorphous because I think one of the things the issues report highlighted very, very clearly last year is that different kinds of systems demand different sorts of attention. So the kinds of things that you can do for something like Han with a very, very limited number of languages that that use it, very different from the sorts of things that you would want to do for, say, Latin, which is like half the languages on Earth. So we have a very different kind of response for each one of these things, and I think that that's appropriate. But the idea is that you have different bodies that work on these things, and those are subsections of the entire Unicode repertoire. Then you have a second panel, and that second panel is ultimately responsible for producing a single unified set of rules for the root zone. So that second panel, has to filter essentially all of the proposed inclusions for the repertoire and all of the proposed rules. And those and that job is one that is taken by that panel for the entire root zone. So what it produces is the set of rules finally for the root zone. You may remember from the integrated issues report, one of the key things that we emphasized in that report is that because there is one zone, there can only be one set of rules. That's true by definition. And that means that this the set of rules needs to be consistent regardless of the linguistic community for which the rules are targeted. And that means that you have to take into consideration things that are perhaps not true for a particular group of language speakers or a particular script. It might, it might be, there might be cross-script effects and so on. That's the job, that's the job of the second panel. And then, what we want to do in the final two pieces of this are to evaluate these, evaluate this proposal against the principles to see whether this proposal actually can conform to all of those principles. And we want to, sort of describe it in terms of those parameters that we described. In the integrated issues report, we had three parameters, but Osmos in particular has been very helpful in describing a fourth parameter, which is this matter of centralization. And so we want to describe it in those terms and sort of understand what kind of what sorts of settings we are establishing. So I think that's sort of an overview. I don't know if people have comments on these things. Oh, I should also respond to some questions that went to the list this morning from Zhou Zhang, who asked what the outcome of the project is. The outcome of the project is this document, as I think Francisco already said. Dennis, of course, is the convener. There aren't exactly going to be any subgroups. There's only one document that we're working on here. I'm going to be the editor, and the fourth question that was there was when the primary panel is to be established and so on. That's all stuff that comes after this. So only after this document is adopted and accepted by ICANN and by the board, I guess. I guess it's the board who does it. Somebody from ICANN would have to tell you that. Ultimately, the procedures that are outlined here would be implemented later, and that's sometime early next year, I guess, is what the project plan calls for. So that's pretty much the overview. I'm wondering if people have comments on this document. Has everybody read it?
Well, Dennis here, I certainly have, and I think it's a great start. Thank you, Andrew, for that. Yes, let's take questions on the document. Rinalia, you have a question. Would you like to speak the question to us? Rinalia? Oh, you're Rinalia, you were answering the I have read it, were you, or were you raising a question? Rinaldi is typing, so we'll wait for that. Not a question. Okay. So back to the group. Any questions for Andrew on the overall document, the structure, the process, what we're trying to do, what the outcome is? The outcome is to produce to an agreed process, which will then be implemented in the subsequent project. Hopefully that is clear from Andrew's presentation. Just wait a few minutes for any questions.
Excuse me, so Alexei Sazonov here.
Yes, please go ahead.
I've read the document that it's very well structured and the ideas it's promoting is very reasonable ideas. Do you think it would be a good idea if, like, each of us, after reading the documents, we should just, in the email list, have just our thoughts about it, that it's, broadly approved, or just like the idea, or we have some suggestions?
Yeah. Alexa, yes, I would encourage you, A, to read the document, and B, to raise any questions or comments that you have on the list. The more work we can do on a continuing basis on the list, particularly as we over the next couple of days in preparation for the face-to-face meeting, the better. So, Alexei, please read it, if you haven't already read it. Raise your comments, submit your comments to the list so that everybody can see them, and your questions. Thank you.
Dennis and Andrew, this is Joseph Yi.
Joseph, please go ahead.
More to Andrew for these questions. I guess this is actually more to the procedure, but the document mentions that the evaluations were trying to do across script evaluations, and it seems that to be, you don't need to be cross-script with every language to cross-script each other, but mainly just to cross-script the particular language slash scripts to Latin, almost to the ASCII point of view. Is that a direction you meant to really like a mishmash of every language against every script against every script?
Thank you, Joseph. Andrew, would you like to pick that one up?
Sure. So fundamentally, there is, when you accept an allocated code point for use in U labels in any zone, what you are saying is that that thing is an acceptable code point for your use in that zone. In the root zone, we have a problem in that normally what you want to do is accept things that are sort of narrowly tailored to your user community. And the root zone, the user community, is everybody on the internet. So in effect, what you have to do is when you are accepting a code point for use in the root zone, you have to evaluate that against all of the other code points that could possibly be used. Now, obviously, if what you're looking at is, for instance, a Han character, you don't actually have to worry about how that's going to interact with, say, Latin small letter A, because they're just completely different uses, right? There's not anything that nobody uses those sort of together in a string or something like that. They're not portions of Unicode that collide with one another. Although, of course, in modern internet usage, the Latin portion that corresponds to ASCII is in wide use and sort of needs to interact somewhat more. So we expect that every panel, including the secondary panel, is going to have enough experience with all of Unicode to understand how the different pieces fit together, at least in the abstract. So this isn't a sort of combinatorial thing where you go through everything in Unicode and then evaluate it against every other character. That process would never complete. But you do have to evaluate for each thing that you're going to permit. You have to evaluate whether it's going to have any effect on any other code point that you're going to permit. And you have to take into consideration, of course, the things that are already in the root zone as a result. So I hope that answers your question. There isn't a sort of either or answer here, is I think what I'm trying to say.
I think I get it, Andrew. The pragmatic approach. You saw me on that. I get it.
Okay, good.
Thanks.
Thank you, Joseph. Any further questions?
Andrew, it's Chris Dillon here. It's actually just following up on what Joseph was saying. I mean, the question that I had in my mind as I was reading it was, maybe very difficult to answer, but it's whether the similarity is, you know, to what extent we're thinking of similarity as we're creating rules, or whether basically what will happen is that rules will suggest things for the root, and at that stage you have another process which comes in and analyzes now to what extent have we got similarity. There are two possible times when similarity checks can be done.
Andrew. Right. So the idea here is that the string similarity, this is a consequence of a decision we made in the integrated issues report. In the integrated issues report, we decided to say that string similarity, like whole string similarity and all the rest of it, is just going to remain the responsibility of the string similarity panel. So it kind of gets punted on. And what this process does is it establishes how you do code point substitution rules only. Now, there is still a similarity issue there, right? Because if you look at, say, Latin A and Cyrillic A, I mean, you've really got a serious similarity problem there.
They're identical.
And at least in just about every font that we can think of. I'm sure you could find a way to distinguish them, but that's not going to be something that you can distinguish, code point by code point.
You cannot find a way to distinguish them.
For the record, who's that?
Michael Everson. For the record, there is no way of distinguishing them. No one ever has ever done that, ever, and no one ever will.
Thank you, Michael. Back to Andrew.
Okay. Right. So it seems to me that the problem there is going to be, you're going to need some kind of automatic rule for those things. And whether it's an automatic rule about context and other things in the string, or whether it's going to be a straightforward substitution rule is a live question. The draft, I think this is in the draft that I circulated, actually says you're not allowed to have context rules out of this process. And one of the consequences of that, and I urge people to read this carefully because this is going to be important. One of the consequences of that is that things like substitution or things like derivation of substitution of Latin A and Cyrillic A might be something that the secondary panel is going to insist on precisely because it can't say, well, if you have a Cyrillic A, you have to have at least one character in the string that is clearly not confusable with some sort of Latin character. That's the sort of context rule that would be not permitted under the text as it's currently written. The reason for that is is one of the principles, the simplicity principle, I think it's called. I forget the names of these, even though I participated in their writing. Yes. The simplicity principle says that, really complex rules are to be avoided because it makes them hard to implement. And so that means that very complicated context rules are not going to be allowed, and that would mean that you can't do sort of whole string evaluations in the rule set. And that means that we've got to pass this on to another panel, and then they have a problem. So that's one of the areas where I think a lot of consideration needs to be, it needs to be put. I mean, this is a proposal, and I'm not wedded to it, but I'm trying to conform to these principles that the IAB seems to like.
Okay, so the summary of that is that the code point similarity is in the rules, and the string similarity is done afterwards in a separate process.
I think that's right.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Chris. Now, can everybody who asked a question introduce themselves by name so that the recording will be easier to transcribe. Well, any more questions?
Hi, Dennis. This is Akshat. I want to ask.
Akshat, please go ahead.
Yeah, regarding this substitution principle, and when we said that a code point substitution would be considered here and string similarity would be attributed to some other panel. So when we say a string, do we say a cluster of characters matching with a cluster of characters, or we are essentially talking about the actual strings as the TLD that have been applied?
Thank you. Andrew?
Because the integrated issues report sort of kicked string similarity off to the string similarity panel, which is already an existing process within ICANN, I really haven't attempted to think about what their rules are, because it seems to me that they could make whatever rules they want. So there are two possibilities that I can think of. One is that they could have a rule that the string that they are considering must not be similar to any actually allocated string, that's already been allocated. And by string, I guess what I'm talking about is a candidate U label, right? So we're not talking strings sort of absolutely, but rather things that could actually be U labels, because there are lots of strings that, are confusingly similar or whatever, like, for instance, prior to normalization. And none of those count because they're not even candidate U labels, and so we're just not going to worry about them. The other possibility is that they're going to think about strings, all the possible strings that could be confusable. Those are two things that I think are outside of the remit of this group, because we're only talking code point by code point. I think that it's an important consideration, and I think it's something that we might want to, have a secondary note or something like that to point out that there's this entire set of issues that we've considered to be outside of our remit, and therefore we haven't talked about them. But, probably the string similarity guys need to come up with a set of answers about this, because really you're only going to be able to evaluate the safety of the entire root policy when you take into consideration both of these portions.
Just one clarification, Andrew, I would like to have is in the point number 3.1, where we are discussing the procedure and the things that primary panel is supposed to do,
okay.
In that we have made two categories of code point substitution. One is 1:1, that is without any context, and the second one is 1:many or 1:many, without any context. And again, point was that what about the third case where we have code points like many are supposed to be substituted with a many? So in that case, it would not be a case of a candidate U label as such, but it will be a cluster of characters similar to a cluster of characters.
I see. So what you want is a series of characters, not really a string, but a sort of substring. That then corresponds to a different set of things, and you can't do it code point by code point.
Right. So
I see.
We have one single code point mapping to a cluster, but it will be a substring matching to a substring.
Okay. If you could propose text for this, it would be helpful, and I think we should do that on the list. But if you could suggest a way to write this compactly, it would be helpful. The key rule here, of course, is that you want to make sure that this doesn't violate the simplicity principle as well, so that, it needs to be simple enough that somebody can understand it. So let's work on some text for this, and we can do that on the mailing list. How's that sound?
Sure, I'll do that. And just one thing that actually I'm talking about the kind of variants that we have mentioned in the Devanagari issues report. And as per our perception goes, it is not much a complicated thing to understand for the native user of the language.
Ah, but wait a minute. You've just raised a really important point. It doesn't matter if it's complicated for the native user of the language. The key thing is that it needs to be not complicated, even for people who don't speak the language. That's part of the rule of this. That's part of the simplicity principle here.
Okay.
That in the root zone in particular, you cannot depend on people understanding the rule because they already speak that language. In that case, we're never going to get anywhere because for any language you pick, somebody doesn't speak it, and we're talking about the entire world here, right? So
yeah.
So the rules need to be simple enough that if you understand enough about Unicode, you can understand the rule even if you don't speak the language.
Yeah, so actually I would like to rephrase my statement. It would be like a native user of the script, actually. So in that case, it becomes independent of the language in this particular case.
Even the script doesn't matter. So you need to be able to understand this if you understand how Unicode works. And that is a very high bar. I am fully aware of how high a bar that principle is, but there's a reason that rule is there, or that principle is there, and that principle is there because we're talking about the entire world. This needs to be the ultimate set of rules needs to be something that can be maintained by people who don't speak the language and who don't use the script and so on. It needs to be something that can be understandable to somebody who understands enough about how Unicode works and who understands enough about how DNS and IDNA work that they can understand what the rule would be even though they don't understand why the rule is there.
I think we'd better take it on the list. Maybe we'll
yeah.
get better clarity.
Mm-hmm. Yep. But I mean, you're leaning on a very, very critical point. So I'm glad that you raised it because it's one of the things that I'm most nervous about in this. People need to understand that those principles are very, very conservative, and they are more likely to restrict code points than they are to allow them.
Sure.
This is Doc here. I'd just like to, can I
please go
make
ahead.
A comment?
Yes, please, Doc. Go ahead.
Yes. I'm coming back to the simplicity principle, and if you read it very carefully, the first sentence itself says, easily understood by users with only some background. Now, what does this mean? Background of language or background of Unicode? I think Andrew means more background of Unicode than background of language. So I think somewhere some amplification is required because to me the simplicity principle seems rather vague, enunciated right here.
So two things about that. The first thing that I would say is these principles are sort of short descriptions to remind people, and if you want to read the full text, you need to go and read the original internet draft. That's something that I tried to state as clearly as possible in the text, but in case it isn't clear, I want to emphasize it again. I'm going to post in the chat room I've just put a link to the original document, and the principles are rather more extensively discussed in that document. And I think that, you know, they're sort of the thing that you really need to read because, you know, these two sentence summaries are here to remind people what the point of these principles are, but the real document, you know, I'm not going to reproduce all the text there because that's the entire document. That's the entire internet draft, but I think that's the key thing. I agree with you, however, that only some background is probably a little bit too vague, so I'll see if I can add something to clarify that.
No, but Andrew, what I'm referring to is the basic IBCP document itself. I went through it, and the simplicity principle still, for me at least, doesn't make much sense. It still remains rather vague. I think it needs a bit of amplification and clarity. What you have stated here is in essence what the principle says, actually, but it doesn't give very clear illustration of what should be and what should not be. This is what I've been trying to say. I think this is what Akshat is also trying to stress.
So
Andrew, two things I think come out of this. One, Dennis here. One is that that's feedback to the IAB, and two, Point. This sounds like a question that we need to explore in more detail next week at the face-to-face meeting. Andrew?
Probably true, but I want to be very careful. These principles are never going to give us an algorithm. They're never going to give us a way by which you can put stuff in and get a guaranteed output where everyone's going to agree. That's why they're principles and not rules. If they were rules, you know, we could just plug them in and sort of turn the crank and we'd get the answer. But they're not an algorithmic set of rules. They're just guidance. And so to a certain extent, they're always going to be vague, unfortunately. And there's a tension actually among some of these principles that is something I don't think can be resolved very easily. So I appreciate the point, but I think that we're going to have to be prepared for a certain amount of vagueness in these principles because they're intended as guidance and not as rules.
Yeah, because that's just what I wanted to say. Some of the principles conflict with one another.
Yes.
It's something like the Gricean maxims, where there's a conflict and somewhere you have to establish a hierarchy and say this one is more dominant and this one is hierarchically more superior to the other one. Like a super maxim and a maxim in Grice.
Yes, but ultimately, a certain number of these things are just going to come down to judgment.
Yeah, I understand.
If there is a primary principle in all of this, and I think this is clear also in the IAB document, and certainly I've tried to make it clear in this document, if there is an overarching principle, it is the conservatism principle.
Absolutely.
And the reason for that is simple, right? It's always easy to permit another one later if experience tells you it's possible, but it's just about impossible to take something out once you've allowed it.
Thank you, Andrew. Are there any other questions?
Edmund.
Edmund, go ahead, please. Edmund Chung.
Thank you. Yeah, I guess two things. One, in terms of the issue of whether contextual rules are allowed. I think, you know, I heard a couple of people who have some feedback, you know, I guess initial feedback and say that might need to be considered, but I haven't really heard, besides the one particular example, whether, you know, why we really need to take up. So here's one of them that I think, you know, perhaps needs to be considered. What do you mean by simplicity how does that compare to simplicity? How does that compare with the bar if we say that there are certain rules where the first character and last character need to be or cannot be certain characters? Because I believe some of the language policies do have that type of characteristic.
Would that be
permissible?
That is a context rule, right? The rule there is essentially having to do with the position of the character with respect to the rest of the U label. And under the current proposal, the answer is no, that's not allowed. That's some other problem outside of these things. Now, what one of the difficulties that I see with that thing is that the basic idea in some cases is that you're going to say this character in a final position, for instance, is blocking, and or is going to be blocked, and so that entire label would then no longer be allowed. And one of the difficulties with the proposal as it currently stands is that it doesn't allow for that kind of flexibility. Essentially, allocation is all the way, and we don't have sort of easy rules about, you know, required to activate versus not required to activate and so on. Maybe the current proposal errs too far on the side of simplicity, but I really want us to think very hard about the consequences for implementation of very complicated rules when we have to cover the entire world. It's quite a different matter in a zone where you know you are sort of dedicated to, you know, some linguistic group or some geographic area or something like that. It's a very different matter from the case where you have to deal with everybody in the whole world and have all of the rules that would cover everything that you could possibly do in Unicode. And the position that the current draft takes is that because this is having to deal with everybody in the entire world, therefore, a bunch of things that would be normal and permissible in a particular zone are things that are just not going to be allowed in this zone. And that means that a large amount of flexibility and a large number of cases that we would normally want to permit for any for this or that language are things that we're just not going to allow because it makes the rules too complicated. So what this really is everybody has to give up something in order to have a common root. And because you have a common root by definition, it's just part of the consequence.
Yeah,
okay.
This Edmund again.
Thank you, Edmund. Just a moment, Edmund, if you wouldn't mind. We're approaching, 4 minutes to the hour. Could you make a quick comment, Edmund? Then I want Asmus, who has had his hand up for some time, to make a quick comment or question, and then I want to draw the call to a close. Back to you, Edmund.
Thank you, Dennis. I think we're getting onto a very, very important and interesting point, and that's why I want to intervene again. When we talk about this in this principle, we also need to think about the context as well. In the DNS context, we always, I would say that there's always a role, in a certain degree, that for, you know, the person in the last character has certain special rules, like it cannot be the hyphen, for example. If we go down the route of that, even this type of contextual rules cannot be set, then we might need to go back and look at the languages that need those kind of rules, and we might even have to take out those characters that might have that characteristic if they are put in the first or last place, and take them out entirely of the permissible code points, which is what we did for hyphen. Actually, we didn't. Hyphen is allowed in the TLD, right? Is it?
Edmund, I'm sorry to cut across you, but I think you're raising a crucial point here. No.
It's pretty important.
Yeah. So I think that we can put that on the list of things to begin to discuss when in LA. Asmus, you had a question or a comment. If you would come in now, please. Are you there? Asmus Freitag, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you now.
Okay, good. The one important thing is that it's an issue for the next draft, the next revision of the draft. We need to go from just pure principles and the abstract issue of the high bar to looking at the specific restrictions that we think follow from these principles and evaluating them one by one. We need to evaluate the context rule limitations in more detail. We need to explain what kind of context rules are too complex, et cetera, et cetera. I think just saying it's not simple is, I think, too simplistic a way to work in this draft.
So as a general thing, as much you're saying that we need to do what in physics we use called the Gedanken experiment. We need to take cases and see how they stand up under the rule that we're proposing.
That would be one good way of doing that. It would be very specific in terms of showing how the principles apply, and that's the only meaningful way how we can, as a collective, get to a decision of what we want to propose.
Okay, of the process. All right. We are coming right up to the hour, and we're only beginning to get going, but we have started the discussions, and we've set the scene for our two-day meeting. So just to reiterate that we need people to read and think and comment and raise questions and get ready for an intensive 2 days in Los Angeles. Naila, can I go back to you and ask you, is there anything you want to add on the organization of the face-to-face meeting, or any comments you want to make at this point to close the this conference call?
Thank you, Dennis. Only that I would like to add that my colleague Nicoletta sent an email yesterday our time detailing all the things that the travelers need to know coming into the meeting. We tried to put the meeting schedule in there, but also the logistics of where everyone is staying and how to get to the new offices. And again, I'd like to emphasize, if you, I know a lot of you have visited us before. We've moved to a whole new office. So take note of our new address and make sure your taxi goes to the new address. But that's it. If there are any questions, Nicolette and I both provided our mobile numbers. Please feel free to call us anytime when you get in, and we'll do our best to help. But take note of all the details sent out last night. If anything is missing, email us, and we'll try to answer the question as soon as possible. And safe trip, everyone.
Thank you very much indeed, Naila. I raised a question on the list about what if it's 3 a.m. in the morning and I need a bit of help. I don't particularly want to call you or Nicola or Nicoletta in the middle of the night. Is there an emergency number, or is there a how, or do I just call you? What's the story?
Just call us. If it's emergency, just call us, please. It's okay. We have security staff that we also call in true emergencies, and we have access to them. So call us, and we'll make sure we'll get something.
Thank you both very much for that. Michael, I see you have a comment. If you would type, as you suggest, into the mailing list your question, and we'll pick it up on the mailing list. Thank you, everybody, very much indeed for taking the time at whatever hour of the world you're in. This is pretty global, from very early in the morning to very late at night. We very much appreciate it, and I look forward to seeing most of you and hearing all of you next week at the face-to-face meeting in Los Angeles. Thank you very much, and goodbye.
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 Bye-bye.
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 Bye.
Bye.
Joined.